And you are tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Ebony Johnson, your host of Ebony's Bones, a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. Our resident historian, Professor Alvar Lowe, is here. We missed him last showtime, but he's back with us.
I missed y'all too.
And we have a wonderful guest who I can get fired up with and all kind of stuff with and have all kind of conversations with, who's called into this show. Thank you so much. And also, I want to say, board member of KKFI, Katina Taylor, who is an educator, a JD, which is Juris Doctorate, right?
That's
Katina,
right.
So
yes.
She knows the law. And founder of Dreams Consulting, LLC. And Katina approached me a couple of weeks ago about having the discussion of what's going on with black hair in school. And there have been a number of different incidences that have gone on across our country. I mean, we know historically there's just been this thing about black people and our hair.
Man.
So we're going to get into it tonight. So welcome to the table, Katina.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Excited to be here on Ebony's Bones.
Yeah. And then we also have the lovely Ronkia Bates on the other side of the glass, who is sitting in to take your calls. This show is a live call-in show, so you're always welcome to join the conversation. That number is 816-931-5534. Again, the number is 816-931-5534, and you can call in with your comments and questions and ideas and whatnot. But Katina, I would like for you to start us out with the incidences that have occurred, and just kind of how you want to start with talking about this subject, and we'll get into some of the history too, and then laws that are, you know, that are being created to combat this, if you will, for lack of a better term.
Absolutely.
But talk to us about what's up with black hair in school.
Yeah, so it's not just school. So let's be real clear about that. It's not just educational institutions. Mm-hmm. We are finding in the workplace as well, mm-hmm. across the country, that this is another way to prevent African-American men and women from getting hired in the first place, mm-hmm. but then possibly being denied promotions or elevation within the corporate sector settings that they're in. For entrepreneurs, they may be looked at as less than professional by clients that they're going after. If you're in the nonprofit sector, you have to court funders. And so it's really interesting that we are looked at in a way that often isolates us if we choose to wear our hair naturally and not assimilate or adopt Eurocentric views of beauty. In educational institutions, what is happening, and interestingly enough, we're seeing it more with males, actually, than females, is that those
really?
That choose, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, those that are making the national news, mm-hmm. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Then as young men attempt to or embrace their natural hair and then wear locks, our natural hairstyles, then we come up against policies about the length of their hair, or, you know, it's a safety factor when they're at sporting events and things of that nature. When we see pro athletes wearing locks down mm-hmm. their backs, and I would think in the NFL, the NBA, it'd be more of a safety factor than in a high school or
exactly.
a college or a middle school, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as I think about this, I'm like, and I'm discussing it more and more. And I'm like, this, it likens back to the voting rights era, mm-hmm. you know, coming up. Every time, you know, black people went to go vote, there was another barrier
some
or another
thing.
Obstacle to hold mm-hmm. them back. And as we have moved forward, and now here we are in 2020, then in the workplace, we're facing new or different or evolved ways of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And as it happens in our educational institutions, of course, then, you know, how does that impact our kids before they even enter the workforce?
So here's my thing, and perhaps then we can discuss the Crown Act as well and what that, you know, and I'll let you share what that is.
Yes.
But one of the things for me is the frustrations, and then also my question about our capacity to respond as a people is, I often find us in, I feel, a position of You know, we just trying to be us. My sister and I, we talk about black people just be chilling. Like, we just, you know, we just chilling and we ain't trying to take over nobody, trying to do whatever. And then stuff come up and we like, what the heck? You been up at night trying to figure out ways how to do all of this stuff. But here is what I want to get to, that I heard someone say once, you can't legislate morality.
Right.
And while I am not saying that it is not important to do whatever we can to create laws that, you know, give us a seat at the table, if you will, let our voices, our hearts, and, you know, who we are be heard, it is when things like this happen, when somebody can say, we were, Professor Lowe and I were reading before the show, just even in Kansas, and, you know, where it's legal, it is legal for them to not hire you and or to fire you if you have locks or, you know, or whatever. It goes against the quote unquote dress code. And you can imagine who made up that dress
code.
That's
legal across the country. It's not just Kansas.
Yeah. But I struggle with, is another law really going to end this whole loophole of, okay, I'll find another
way. The system of white supremacy?
Yes.
That's what you ask? Just ask it. Just ask it.
Okay,
go ahead, Mo.
I've been quiet for like 10 minutes.
Okay.
I've been holding myself for like 10 minutes. I've been
okay.
Come
on.
So here's the thing, right? Being a historian, this reminds me of something that I used to listen to all the time. It was a Malcolm X speech called Ballad of the Bullet. Right? In there, he said that if we do not secure and maintain our own communities,
come on,
then we will end up having to disgracefully and sadly beg our oppressors for
our freedom.
For our jobs.
But is that not your freedom? Economics?
Yeah.
Come on.
But hold on. We sacrifice that. We sacrificed that in integration. We sacrificed all of that in integration.
Absolutely.
So now we are complaining. Think about it like this, right? You have these, and I'm just using Kansas City as the model. We have a black community that was struggling for years. African Americans, instead of trying to stay in there, work on the school district, they decided to flee to the suburbs, like most African Americans in most cities. But in the suburbs, you ain't got no protection. You are officially outnumbered. So you send your kids to these predominantly white schools, and then they start discriminating on you. Did you think that this wasn't going to happen to you?
I agree. I cannot argue that. You're absolutely right.
So I look at this situation as just another cautionary tale about what happens if you choose to be in a minority setting.
Yes.
You don't, in 2020, we don't have to do that.
But access and integration was a trick, right? And we fell for it, right? Because you had disinvestment in our communities. We finally had access. And remember that civil rights movement was about gaining access.
Right. Not about integration.
And then when we, you know, and so the, and we got the access, but what we didn't, and so we bought into the lie that the ice was colder somewhere else. Now I have access to nicer things. They're going to welcome me and all of that. And so like you talked about not legislating morality, what they didn't realize is that the minds of the people, the hearts of the people, hadn't changed. It was really that they had got to a place where the economic impact was so difficult that they had to make a change. And so we were like, oh, we made it. And
but
then we're like,
well,
we made it where? Right?
Never made it in.
We didn't. And King even changed his message, you know, back then is, hey,
well, so
I got access, but I don't have a nickel to buy what I want.
The thing about
Martin, so have we really made the right choice?
Exactly.
The thing about Martin Luther King, and I always got to throw this out there, is that Martin Luther King, he saw economics as a way to expose and kill racism. He said that if you look at socioeconomics, that if you examine it properly, that you could expose racism for what it was and
absolutely,
you can kill it. But what he found out in the latter half of his life is that most white Americans are willing to give up socioeconomics for the association with the power structure, which is what white supremacy is.
Right?
That's why he started to realize, well, you know, I'm integrating my people into a burning house. But once he passed away, the integration process didn't stop.
Right?
Instead, like you said, we bought into it. But in all reality, we've been buying into this idea that Eurocentric ideology is supreme. That the white man's ice is colder. I mean, think about it. We've been straightening our hair and bleaching our skin since 1900.
If not before, right? I don't know.
1900, yeah. I mean, the whole hot comb.
Yeah, I think about that all the time. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I honor the entrepreneurial pursuits of women that launched hair styling businesses and relaxing businesses and all that. The entrepreneurial spirit was great. But we have to reflect and say, why did we do that? Mm-hmm. And was that really good for us? Mm-hmm. And now we're learning many, many years later that from a health perspective, it wasn't good for us. From a self-image perspective, it wasn't good for us. A cultural perspective. Like, so we're now looking back and we're really seeing the damage that, you know, that occurred to us as black women, black men, from embracing or assimilating just to be accepted into white America.
Yeah.
I want to give the number out to folks who want to call in and weigh in on this conversation about black hair. Initially, we wanted to bring it especially to the forefront what's going on with our children in schools and how we're able to deal with that. The number is 816-931-5534. Again, 816-931-5534. And thank you to everybody who's tuning in on Facebook Live on the Ebony's Bone Show. We appreciate you for listening. Katina, talk about the Crown Act.
So the Crown Act launch started in California. Interestingly enough, it was an African-American woman that had no hair that launched it. And so they...
and it stands... tell us what it stands...
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what it stands for. So it's creating a respectful and open world for natural hair. Crown. And that's a historic thing for us when we talk about our crowns, because we also talk about the tradition of wearing big hats and all these other things. And so, I mean, everyone started, they had increasing incidents in recognizing that this was another hurdle, another boundary, another obstacle for people to either get an opportunity to enter the workforce or for advancement once they were in. And I'm going to give you some stats, actually, that also came out. So Dove is a partner in this.
I have a question about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I know you do. I know you do, right? Like, so 2,000 women were surveyed, 1,000 black, 1,000 white, ages 25 to 64 across the United States, all employed full-time, currently working in an office or a sales setting, or had worked in a corporate office in the past 6 months. So the data that they gathered was about 30% of black women, or let me say this better, black women are 30% more likely to be made of a formal workplace appearance policy. Hence.
Made aware of.
Yeah. So I'm coming to you, you're in the workplace, and I'm telling you as a black woman, you know, let me let you know what the policy is, right? 80%. Black women are 80% more likely to agree with the statement that I have to change my hair from its natural state to fit in at the office. And that's another stat. Black women, 1.5 times more likely to be sent home from the workplace because of their hair. 83% are more likely to report being judged more harshly on her looks than other women. And so it's real. I mean, 3.4% are times more likely to be perceived as quote unquote unprofessional. We can even talk about the military. I mean, the military just recently, 2014, 2015, actually then launched their policy that locks or natural hairstyles were allowed to be worn by women and or men. In the military, and they still have some standards in regards to length and cleanliness and things like that. But prior to cornrows, locks, French braids, anything like that that's unique to us as a people, were not allowed.
I don't understand why. I'm sorry.
Jump in.
My whole thing is, I don't understand why black people are still surprised about white supremacy.
We're not. We're not surprised.
I'm
for
saying,
real.
Like, these statistics are like, I mean,
it's just reiterating the system is working.
Absolutely.
In a way,
the system
meant
is
to,
working. Yeah. I have a friend. She's a white woman, right? She teaches. She's a teacher. She's a professional teacher. She teaches in, I believe she teaches in Kansas now. Right? She has fire red hair. When I first met her, she told me what she did. I said, do you understand that you can pull this off based off of your privilege that you have. And yeah. I told her, you know, black people can't get jobs with fire red hair, not in a professional setting.
Yeah, I think the first time I was shocked is that I was participating in a fellowship program. Mm-hmm. And the founders of that program were white girls, and they were girls because they were in their 20s. So right. young ladies. Mm-hmm. Compared to me, though, they were girls. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one came in with purple hair. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they're courting funders, asking for millions of dollars. They're engaging with a lot of professionals. You know, they seeking media attention. Mm-hmm. And you got personal hair, purple hair. Mm-hmm. I was blown away by that. Like, that was the first time I even took notice. And it was actually, interestingly enough, the same time I had decided to lock my hair. Mm. And so, you know, I don't know if that made it more noticeable to me at that time, or if I was even subconsciously thinking about this decision I was making. But to see that, and I asked the question, like, are you concerned because you are being seen as a professional about this? And she was like, absolutely not.
See? Mm-hmm. And, you know, let me say this about my homegirl. You know, there's nothing, I don't want to say anything derogatory. That's my homegirl. I love her to death. So, yeah, it's just, I had to let her know, like, you're experiencing something that most black people don't.
Right.
But the issue is that black people haven't figured out how to combat white supremacy successfully.
Yeah. So that is my thing, Katina, is... Even though, okay, I understand there's this Crown Act initiative, mm-hmm. and is it 100,000 signatures they're looking for to, I think I'd read
on the petition,
the petition. Uh-huh. To get this going.
Yeah.
And that is, I just feel, I mean, I'm glad that we are attempting to utilize the law and, you know, in things that we can do, but I feel as though, what is that really going to do? Because even when a law is passed, mm-hmm. it's only as strong as people's ability to enforce it. It's
absolutely.
A lot of laws on the books.
No, absolutely.
And you could say, oh, you can't do that. You can't. But people do stuff against the law all the time.
Absolutely.
And so in this scenario, I feel as though, okay, let's pass this crown. Let's say the Crown Act gets passed across the United States, mm-hmm. and it says you cannot discriminate against people based on their hair and things that are natural, you know, natural to them, etc.
Mm-hmm. Will it be enforced?
Will we just be in court, and then you have to have enough money or support somehow in order to even bring stuff to court? There's time involved in that. There is, you know, just the.
And are the penalties going to be worth it?
Right.
You can penalize somebody if they pay a $250 fine. Was that really going to hit them deep enough in the pockets or really make a significant impact? So I think we have to be very strategic in not only how we craft the state, mm-hmm. the legislation, but also then the penalties that we actually put in place to enforce it. But here's the thing. So I believe that change comes when you work in the system and outside the system. Mm-hmm.
Wait, we got to take a station break. We got an underwriting spot to play.
All
right. We're going to be back. Everyone, you're tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. This is Ebony's Bones, a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. And we will be back after these station messages. All right, and you are back here on 90.1 FM KKFI Ebony's Bone Show. I am your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our historian, Professor Albert Lowe, and our guest, Katina Taylor, educator, JD, founder of Dreams Consulting, and we're talking about black hair. And there's been a lot in social media on what's going on with our children in schools. It's also obviously what's been going on with black women and men in the workplace and in various places. And even, let me say too, even in our homes, mm-hmm. you know, and in our own perspectives of what we look at when we see ourselves in the mirror. But before the break, Katina, I want you to go ahead and finish your comment that you wanted to say before we took a break.
Yeah, so I was saying, you know, we have to work on change in the system and outside the system. Mm-hmm. And so I was saying to the professor, he just ready to fall out of his seat. He is not, he preaches to the choir when he says what he says anyway.
Yeah.
He just doesn't know it because he don't know me well enough. But I was having a conversation with a colleague on the way over here, and she was like, well, Katina, Why are we even doing this? Why not? Mm-hmm. Well, we just need to have our own communities, our own schools, our own businesses, you know, all these things. And mm-hmm. that's right. I don't disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that we should, and we have historically had those things, but they have deteriorated over time. They mm-hmm. no longer exist, but that doesn't mean we can't rebuild them. But in the meantime,
why did they deteriorate?
Disinvestment
and
racism, white supremacy, and lack of black support. Yeah,
let's
just
keep it real.
And that's what happens. Like, this didn't happen by accident.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we were culturally deprived. Language, customs, our own schooling, all of these things happen with a very clear intent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so all of us have been impacted. Mm-hmm. Now, what I will say, Professor, is that so our minds and our sense of self mm-hmm. were impacted. So we are going through somewhat of a renaissance now.
Yes.
And so we, you know, some people say getting woke, becoming woke and all that. What I say is we're just relearning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it takes time. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to undo it overnight. There are some significant things that we should be doing that we can do and that we will do.
Mm-hmm.
But until we get there.
I'm being mm-hmm. patient.
Go ahead, because he's about to jump out of his seat.
Because I got a question, right? You're saying that we relearned this. Remember that the Black Power movement only happened in the 70s. So mm-hmm. when do we lost it again and we got to relearn it again?
We do, unfortunately.
Or do we started not loving ourselves?
But was that not intentional?
Of course, it's always been intentional.
That's all I'm saying.
Is in the 1970s, that was the one time you started seeing black people start loving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm black and I'm proud.
Yeah.
What happened to that?
What happened to it was, hey, people got killed. People were mass incarcerated. Drugs were dumped into our communities. Like, we are in warfare.
I'll say this.
And this are some of the natural consequences of being in warfare.
Understood. Mm.
And we just got to be real about that.
Wait,
and so when you look in the mirror and you say you like you Ebony said, you in the mirror, you what do you see? Have you been taught to love yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And many of us have not, and we have to be honest about that.
Because even for me, I watched Chris Rock's Good Hair documentary.
Absolutely.
And that gave me a wealth of information, and I said, oh my goodness, that's what I'm doing to myself? Mm-hmm. When it was like just fact-based, this is what relaxers do, and how it was all sorts of stuff, and I was like, that's what I'm doing, and that's what inspired me to have my hair be natural. But very frankly, it was not all the way embraced by me, and I will say men in my family. But you know, when I decided to go natural, it was, I got questions like, do you miss when your hair was straight and longer, you know, and all this other kind of stuff. So it was not embraced.
So when I was with the fam, that's when I got put on about the relaxers, mm-hmm. and I tried to, you know, start talking to my mom and my sister. It was a process because they end up growing their locks and growing their hair out. But what I've really learned and what I'm still struggling with, is especially in regards to being a male, mm-hmm. is that when it comes to black women's hair, that's when I'm just going to be quiet.
We do have a caller. but not be quiet. Be in support, though.
And I will
say we got a caller.
Okay, go ahead.
We got a caller. We're going to take the call. Michelle on line one from Jersey, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hello, I have a comment, and I work in luxury retail, and I'm natural. So that in and of itself is a whole just mind game, because I notice how other people, how customers in particular react to me, and even my co-worker who's a black male, he notices how they interact with me as well. And it's just like versus the African-American women who have relaxed hair or their hair is blown straight. It's almost like I'm not familiar with you, or if you don't look or sound in the box that I need you to sound as a black woman and look as a black woman, it's like regardless of the service, it throws them off. But I also wanted to add, too, if I can. So with the natural hair and having the conversation, one thing that I've just kind of been perplexed about is getting your hair done. And as a natural African-American,
mm-hmm.
going to African-American salons, and they charge me more for having natural hair. And so I'll just get, it's like literally living on the East Coast, a wash and set is $130. And that's no manipulation to the hair, no nothing, not literally nothing but washing, shampooing your hair, and like sitting under the steam. And for me, it's like these will be the same women complaining about we're not accepted in you know, diverse settings, but it's like when we go to the hair salon, we're charged more by African-American women because we have natural hair. And my hair is really short, like really short. And especially when I first started growing it back, I was charged like $140 for that. So that was just my comment, and I just wanted to throw that out there.
Can I ask a question?
You have a question for me?
Yeah. So, yeah, wait, okay. How, if it's like $100 for your hair to get washed and like...
$130
$130
Okay, so yeah. How much are the white salons charging?
I don't know because I don't go to any white salons. I wash my hair before. And mind you, I don't mind. Sorry, if I don't want to go over.
No, keep tell your story.
Okay, I don't knowledge, skill, whatever. I don't mind paying for that, and I don't mind paying for what you have and what you have to offer. But if you're going to charge me $130 for short natural hair, and it's not past my ears, like it's a little fro, I just kind of feel like, well, okay, if you were just charging that, but if I see your other services, so the relaxer is going to get like $75, $100. But the natural hair with no manipulation, meaning no, I'm talking about not even twist, no twist on my hair, I'm getting charged $130. And I have an appointment tomorrow for $130. But it's like, and I know it's on the East Coast, so that's completely
different. Still the comparison, though, you, Michelle, you did say that if you were to get a relaxer, it would be $75, but you're getting just a shampoo and condition, and it's $130. That's double. And put you under the steamer. That's double.
So first of all, I do know that coastal markets are different. And so I would think that we will see varying trends across the country. But I have been, and I am a part of on social media and things like that, natural hair groups. And it has been shocking to me to hear what people pay. Because if I had to pay that, I'd be doing my hair at home, period. I do respect professionals and what they have to offer, like you said, but that's absolutely ridiculous. I do want to shout out New Jersey because New Jersey did pass the Crown Act. Yes, so you are protected as an employee. Your children are protected in educational workspaces. So I love that about New Jersey. They are moving. They were the second actually to pass it. In your field, because you said you're in luxury retail, right? You know what you know. You present how you present. Yeah. They either get with it or they don't. But they don't connect with you, and I'm going to tell you why. Because their lens is a Eurocentric view of beauty and what it means to be in that space of retail luxury. They have an idea. If they close their eyes and had to put their salesperson in the chair, generally it ain't even going to be a black person. So the fact that you black, that's first. Exactly. Then you have natural hair and you haven't permed it and straightened it to look like them. And it's really interesting that we get discriminated against for these types of things when what history in past and current shows us is that they are doing everything they can to look like us.
Exactly.
But then you want to discriminate against me.
Me.
Because I'm just being me.
I have a question. Haven't we adopted those same ideologies when we start looking at ideas of beauty, though?
We were brainwashed. Let's be real. We were enculturated, if we want to use the real term. We were enculturated. So all of the things that were put before us were as close to white as you could get. So even if it was actresses and things like that on TV, they were light-skinned actresses first, right? We're just now getting into the dawn of dark-skinned beauty. Like, let's be real about this. So as close to white as you can be, white was right. And so our minds, I believe when you talk about a neurological change happened to us from slavery on, and it persists.
And the other thing too, and Brandy, we'll let you, I don't even know what you have to do this evening, but we'll let you off the line. But thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you guys. Have a good show.
Thank you. You can join the conversation at 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. I want to put on just, we bring this up, I feel like, in a lot of shows I do, is that you cannot get past what you see all the time.
Absolutely.
Even if you, and hear, mm-hmm. whether you agree with it on one level, like it or not, it is, it's carbon copied all the time. And so if I just keep looking at a certain image, it's getting seared in my brain and in my mind. If I keep hearing a certain tone, a certain, you know, whatever, it's in me. You know what I mean? It's programming, like, basically. And so there is no, and there was a study, I think I read this or saw this somewhere, some study about even when you're feeding your baby and you have the white baby on the Gerber, you know, if it's Gerber food or whatever it is, your baby sees that, you know, and so the identity, I think us not, I mean, we talk about it, but really realizing the impact of what it is we allow ourselves to view on a consistent basis, what it is we allow ourselves to hear. Some things you can't help. You go outside, you see billboards, magazines, certain things you can't help. But I can definitely help what I watch on TV, the movies I choose to support or not to support, etc.
And intentionality is key.
Yes.
Dr. Frances Cress Welsing she wrote this book called The ISIS Papers, The Keys to Color. And Dr. Neely Fuller, mm-hmm. who is the person who was above her, worked with her as far as her psychology, mm-hmm. understanding the psychology of black psychology. One of the things I remind myself, I remind my students, what I absorbed in that literature, is that the brain saves information and images,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you continue to push these images to people, regardless of what their race is, they're going to start to absorb and adopt those images
absolutely
as being whatever their understanding or ideology of the reality is. But then again, like, how do you combat? That's what I'm going to go back to, is that how do we combat this?
But that's what I mean, Professor Lowe, is at some point, I'm not saying that certain things are not difficult, but at some point, when I do realize that the brain, say that again, the brain saves images,
saves information and images.
Mm-hmm. If I realize that, if I sit with myself and I realize, oh my gosh, do I really like me? Do I, you know, am I saying I don't like this about myself because I'm seeing these other images that don't look like me? At some point, do I not say, you know what? I can't keep looking at this stuff. I can't keep listening to such and such. I'm going to have to start watching alternative things or being a part of different entertainment or whatever so that I am not subjecting myself to somebody else's image that of beauty that they want to push.
Well, I mean, you even think about kids. We did a study with very little kids years ago, and then more recently we repeated the study.
The doll test,
right? Mm-hmm. And then not only that, they showed them other images. They talked about which doll was bad, the black doll, right. Which one was ugly, mm-hmm. the black doll, you know, all of that. I did it. The woman, the author of White Fragility was here at UMKC mm-hmm. recently.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that kids as young as 3, 4, and 5 years old, if you ask them, what was it better to be black or white? They would always tell you white. So I said, let me test this. Because remember, I got grandkids. I have mm-hmm. grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a 5-year-old grandson and a 3-year-old grandson. They were at the lecture. Now, they weren't paying attention. They weren't tuning in. So afterwards, they were running around. So I called the oldest one over to me first. I mm-hmm. said, come here. Let me ask you a question. And I said, is it better to be black or white? His little brother wasn't nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. Wasn't around. He said, oh, white, grandma. I was like, okay, thanks. Go play. Mortified in my spirit, right? Screaming.
Yeah.
So I called the younger one over, asked the same question. He had the same exact mm-hmm. answer.
Yeah.
So it goes directly to Ebony's point that even as young as those kids are, the subliminal and subconscious mm-hmm. messaging is this black thing, don't sit well to, you know, don't sit too well with me. Mm-hmm. So we have to then, as a family, as the parents, grandparents, you know, uncles, cousins, whoever, mm-hmm. we have to be very intentional about what images we place in them. So for me, mm-hmm. I was like, well, I have a room for them at my house. So I am very intentional. I got, you know, the black code there. Mm-hmm. You know, I got the 4-point plan of the Black Panthers. I said, mm-hmm. I'm doing a whole wall of their room with HBCU pennants.
Yeah.
Things like that. The literature that I buy for them, it has images of black little boys and girls so that they see.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about these things. I'm going to influence them in any shape, form, or fashion that I can, but that's my job.
Yeah.
To counteract what is being done to us by the larger society. And so as we become healed,
mm-hmm.
as we become able to transform our minds, then we have to do that for other people around
us. Wait, is that what
that's
we're
how
doing?
It gets done.
You think we're healing now?
Oh, I think absolutely.
I do. I'm not, maybe not at a rate that we, as fast maybe as we want to be, but I do believe so. Especially even with the wave, even as we're talking about, but even as our caller said about even black hairstylists are still charging more to do natural hair, there was still a wave. I know that as a black woman, of black women who really went into having their hair natural, you mm-hmm. know, and that in and of itself is a big thing because hair is a big thing.
I told you, I'm not messing with the hair.
And I know, but that's what we
need
for,
right? But I'm saying to you, that is...
I think the hair is a microcosm of
symptomatic,
other...
Symptomatic, yeah. A larger issue.
Yeah. Oh, definitely some serious mental pathologies that we are experiencing. I think the hair is just a microcosm. Because I'm like this, you can't be pro-black and not be around black people.
Right.
That, you know, you can't just say, hey, I'm going to grow my dreads and then, you know,
my locks.
and I'm not going to send my kid. My kid has locks and they go to an all white school and then they pick another all white college. Like that, I think that that's counterproductive.
I especially agree.
When we have so many HBCUs out there that are failing because black people don't want to support them.
Well, and for another reasons as well, let's be real.
Other than what? Because support is how these schools get their money, right?
That's true.
So if we ain't supporting them, because we know white America's
not
going.
They have other sources and pools of income as well.
Other than what?
Getting
money from their students? Tell me.
Oh, yeah, they have access to other pools of money, governmental and otherwise. They are not self-sustaining. They never have been self-sustaining.
Because we went to Florida A&M and FSU across the street looked totally
Florida
different.
Florida State University.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Florida State University looked mm-hmm. completely different than our school.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say that they were around about the same time. Mm-hmm. FSU got a little jump on us.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, like, they had more students. Where they getting all this money from?
Mm-hmm.
We do have to take a station break, our last break before the show is up tonight. You are welcome to call in and weigh in with your questions or comments at 816-931-5534. Again, 816-931-5534. This is Ebony's Bones, a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. And we're talking about black hair tonight. And Katina Taylor, educator, JD, and founder of Dreams Consulting is here to talk with us about what's been going on, and especially in social media as we're seeing our youth being really impacted with. Katina, I want to talk about some of those examples too,
yes.
Especially the one who wasn't able to walk, was told he couldn't walk for graduation. Mm-hmm. And unless he cut his locks, et cetera, and what maybe those families, you know, are doing
mm-hmm.
To respond to that.
Yeah.
But we'll be back after our station break. Stay tuned with us, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, and we're back here on Ebony's Bones at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We do have a caller, you all, so I'm going to let that caller get in. Caller, you are on the air. Go ahead, state your name, where you're calling from, and with your question or comment.
Hi, Ebony. This is John. I'm in Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm very fascinated by race issues myself. I'm a 72-year-old white man and have a lot of experience in Kansas City. I've grown up here all my life, and I'm fascinated by a lot of your conversation, and I'm interested in what I find when I talk to some of my black friends, too, because they have some really interesting perceptions themselves, and so we try to dovetail in with each other, you know, and make some sense out of the division that's artificial. My argument is that is completely artificial. I have one friend who said black skin was thicker than white skin. No, it's not. And it's just pigmentation. It's basically an artificial construct that was created at the founding of pretty much the country. And it was in order to create a commercial enterprise, a capital enterprise in the slave trade. And it's perpetuated right now because it's still politically advantageous. And that's the thing that upsets me because it took me a long time to figure that out. So it's kind of late in life, and have understood a lot of the dynamics of gender bias as well, for that matter, but particularly the racial division, which I think is a curse on the country.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in with your comment. We appreciate it.
No problem.
I don't think we disagree.
Not at all.
Yeah. We certainly understand the economics behind, you know, the social constructs that exist, the whole, you know, existence of black and white and the exploitation of black people in this country, and Africans in this country, the corporate sector, like, you know, my like peer Dove. In here saying Dove, like, why is Dove sponsoring this, that type of thing. You know, corporate social goodwill is always going to be a point the corporations utilize to gain consumers and things like that. But let me, and what I said to you, and I'll combat that, is like, you know, they put their money behind research, you know, and things like that. I haven't went out and bought a single Dove product, and I don't plan to. So you have to be aware of when you are being exploited or not, and then your response to that supposed or attempted exploitation. So, hey, they got behind it. They did the work of supporting, you know, this research and things like that, and giving us the information. I'm all G for that. But you don't hear me when I'm talking about the Crown Act, talking about Dove.
Okay.
You know, I'm talking about legislation and protecting us.
Yeah.
Period. Right. Point blank. Right. Like, right. So, Ebony, I know you said before we went to break you wanted to talk about the most recent issues that came up with the two young men in Texas. One being a senior, and actually his cousin is also at the school as well. He has since been suspended as well.
Mm-hmm. But it's for people who haven't followed it on social media, break it down and tell us what happened.
So, yes, there's a African-American young man who is a senior in high school in Texas, DeAndre Arnold. And
That's the senior.
And so he was suspended from school and told that if he did not cut his hair, that he would not be able to walk for graduation. So initially, the uproar was, you know, it's about his natural hair. The school combated that, all white school board, by the way, suburban area. And so the school board said, no, this policy has been in place. It is not about his locks. It is about the length of his hair. Hmm. There's a barber that they use across the street who is white, who has said that for years, young men are sent over if their hair grows below their collar. Mm-hmm. And he's then the barber that the school uses to get them into compliance pretty quickly. So I guess they leave during class. I don't know. That's interesting. I said it's a great moneymaker right there, huh?
Right.
But in any case, my argument to this is simple. He's been a student at the school since seventh grade. He's a senior.
Yes.
So you're just now choosing to enforce this policy? Why? Mm-hmm. So they speak before the school board, community outrage. You have representatives from the Black Lives Matter movement. They're his parents. You know, the community is just like, hey, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. And then the following week, his cousin, who also has locks, and that is Kadeem Bradford, he also gets suspended from school. Mm-hmm. So, which it sounds a bit like retaliatory conduct.
Right.
You know, when you start talking from a legal perspective, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Jada.
I'm just saying, right? So, and I'm not saying that they're not in violation of the policy. The way the policy is written is even if you wear your hair up, mm-hmm. when it's down, if it falls below the collar, then of course. Mm-hmm. But my argument is really simply, if this policy has been in place and you neglected to enforce it for all of these years, that begs the question of why. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, you know, oftentimes in a contract, if we sign off on it, because some people have argued, oh, but they knew what it was when they signed up for the school. And that's why they were wearing it up and things like that. But we also know that our hair grows.
Right.
And so, and what does that have to do with his grades? Mm-hmm. His academics, mm-hmm. you know, nothing. His self.
The school is a school that dope. That we can't take him out. Is it?
No, no. But like, he's great to graduate.
He's a senior.
He's been there. It's not been an issue. He's a senior now.
Right. But
they graduate in a couple of months.
Right. True. But the school is actually actively discriminating on this young man.
But they just decided to enforce that. Katina said he's been going there since the seventh grade.
Right. I understand that. I'm not debating that.
And I'm going to be perfectly honest. A lot of parents will sign off on a student handbook saying they read it, and they did not read it.
Of course.
I mean, and that is a lot of parents, right? I didn't say it was a black thing at all. I said parents, right?
Right.
And so, you know, like, oh, yeah, I got it. I know, you know, don't act bad. Come to school on time. You know, the simple things, right? Like, be a good person, and we're good. We're in compliance. And so perhaps they read it. Perhaps they did not. I don't know. Mom did say that she had conversations, and that's why she started getting it, you know, plaited closer to his scalp, making him wear it up, things like that. It was never an issue. I don't know if the school board president has changed. I don't know if I don't know what the.
So I have a question for you, Katina. With all of your experience, being a JD and being an educator, when we have laws that are on the books and are not enforced, and then people can choose to enforce them at will when they, you know, whenever they decide to, do we have any recourse to look at laws and request that they be removed to combat and say, hey, you haven't enforced this in such and such amount of time, and so therefore your decision to enforce it now in and of itself is illegal or whatever at best?
Like a statute of limitations?
So it depends on the context. It depends on what you're doing. So then I was going to get to that. So, like, there are rules and regulations state by state, you know, depends on what you're doing. But in any case, oftentimes a portion of a contract, mm-hmm. and ultimately signing off on the student code of conduct, you're creating a contract between yourself, the family, and the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have this policy on place. So we got 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. So mm-hmm. 5-6 years they have not. So oftentimes that voids that term of the contract. That doesn't void the total contract, but it voids that term because you have chosen to overlook that.
Okay.
You let me break it. You didn't enforce it. So it voids it out.
Okay.
And everything else that's remaining, you know, you can enforce it, you know, like you have been. So I think that from a legal standpoint, that would be my standing. Mm-hmm. I would argue that. I would not argue necessarily discrimination or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I talk about being strategic. Like, what is the footing that I can stand on that's going to help me be successful here, even understanding and knowing that the underlying issue is discrimination. I will say this, though, to parents in educational institutions, be it a discriminatory issue, be it high rates of suspension,
mm-hmm.
being pushed out, pulled out, special ed services, all the things that impact our kids in schools that we know don't serve them, we have not been active enough, mm-hmm. proactive enough. And I would say, and we always make the argument, start our own schools.
Right.
That's a whole other conversation. How do I get someone to bring me to the table so that I can have a conversation and let you know what my demands are in regards to my tax dollars coming into your school to educate my child?
Yeah.
Pull your kids.
Are they obligated to listen?
Pull my kids. Because what do we say is the driving force for change? It's always been economics.
Economics. Mm-hmm.
Economics for schools is based on average daily attendance. If my kids are not there, you're not getting paid. Oh. Pull your kids. Open up churches. If you got to go to work, you can't keep them home. Open up the churches in our communities.
Come on.
I'm with that.
Put them there. Don't give me the argument. Well, they ain't going to learn nothing if they at the church. They ain't learning nothing in the schools anyway.
Because I see this situation off in Lee Summit not too long
from now. Of course.
Like, Lee Summit is pretty much showing it. But then, like, you can't get black people to stop moving to Lee Summit.
Well, that's their own ignorance and self-hate. And we got to deal with that. And we got to have real conversations about that. But what we're talking about in that instance is put backing an African-American superintendent that's working for the benefit of all kids into a corner where he had to then exit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with it. Well,
Katina, okay. So you are saying that for parents to understand the power that they have, especially in the United States and given our context, is in these situations, if your child is being discriminated against, not treated fairly, etc., then these parents then have the right to do something like, if churches agreed to take them to a church while they're at work or, you know, or whatever, and they not be in school because of this.
Yeah. And, you know, if we do that collectively.
Yeah.
So this is organizing, right? So all of us have to be, you know, willing to do this. So you do this for a short period of time. I guarantee you, you're going to get phone calls. What's going on? We need to know why, you know, your kids are not here. And then we're going to say, we pulled our kids because of X, Y, and Z. And until you meet our demands, we're not bringing them back.
I think that's a great idea. How realistic you think it is, though?
It'd be realistic if we had the gumption to do it.
Okay, because
but that's
that
very doable, though.
Absolutely.
What I'm saying about that I like is because you churches are somebody's usually working there. I mean, I know that people would have to be able to be there, you know, to support the children or whatnot. But people can come together and do that, and parents wouldn't have to be, you know, because at the end of the day, we all got to think about, well, shoot, I do have to pay my bills. You know what I mean? And so the parents would still be able to go to work and know that their children can be in a safe space.
Absolutely.
And then they can stand up for what it is that they're standing up for. But as you talked about, I think that requires us working in tandem.
Absolutely.
You know, with, why are you looking at me like
I'm
that,
listening.
Professor Lowe?
I mean, we did it. We did it. I mean, what's the biggest example? The immediate example that comes to mind is the Montgomery bus boycotts.
But that's not immediate.
Before, we were the real Ubers and Lyfts. Oh. We were like, come on, like before ride sharing was a thing, we did it.
Okay, I agree, but like we lack in the cohesion area.
So now we're lacking is the tools to effectively organize. We know how to mobilize. Something happened, and we need to go, for instance, here's my example, tomfooleries, not too long ago, right?
Yeah.
That's why it's not open anymore, because we mobilize very quickly around an issue. Nice. Organization is long-term.
Yeah.
It requires a different set of skills. And we have to understand that there may not be something immediate that happens, but we have been organizing forever. Mm-hmm. We just need to reignite and put it in place, and we have to trust each other. And we have to make a stand, and we have to sacrifice if we really want change.
There you go. Professor? Go ahead. 30 seconds.
Good.
You done? All right. Well, we do have to wrap.
Soon.
I know we'll talk more after the show. But thank y'all for listening and for tuning in to Ebony's Bones. And we'll have another show on February 13th at 7 p.m. We do this show. We were able to do a second one this month because of the fifth Thursday. But we'll talk about Black patriotism. So you'll have to tune in for that. But stay tuned for the local showcase, which is coming up next. And then after that, the Great Grateful Dead Hour, and then the second set will take us up to midnight. Go ahead, Katina.
I didn't feel like we got enough. So if you're interested in supporting the Crown Act, there are many things that you can do to do that. Go to the Crown Act.
Or you can
Google it.
If you're interested in information on
information.
It, let's say,
sorry about that. Yes. We want to make sure we're in compliance. You can go to thecrownact.com. There also is some legislation on the floor in Kansas right now at the state level. If you go to Facebook's, Instagram, Twitter, and you want to learn about that legislation, go to Shirley's Kitchen Cabinet. Look them up. You find more information and ways in which you can be informed about what is going on around hair discrimination in schools and in the workplace.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Katina Taylor, educator, JD, and founder of Dreams Consulting. We'll talk about it later. We got to go.
Yes.
All right. Y'all have a good night, and thanks so much for listening.
Bye, Kansas City.